Hi, welcome to Backstage Soundtrack. I'm Tom from Hot Tub Time Machine. This episode features Hayden James. Hayden and I spoke in Brooklyn, New York back in November 2017. This is just after he'd released Numb and was embarking on a golden run of amazing songs that would make him one of the biggest electronic artists in the world. Hayden's a lovely guy and a great musician. I hope you enjoy this interview.
Man, thank you so much for doing this.
Mate, it's my pleasure. I'm really excited to be here with you in New York City and being involved.
So let's talk about where we are. We're here in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg, at your beautiful apartment. Here.
I lucked out. This is my favorite Airbnb I've ever stayed in.
Okay.
So it's good. Yeah. There's a surfboard behind you. There's, you know, high ceilings. There's light.
Man. Hey, I think of all the people, all our friends and stuff, you may have spent the most amount of time standing behind a couple of CDJs and a mixer in front of a crowd. When did you start DJing?
I started DJing when I was 16 years old. I think you're right.
What kind of year would that have been when you were 16?
I bought my first set of decks after the 2000 Sydney Olympics.
Right.
Because, yeah, so I played, so I was making coffee there every day. I was working for a spotless catering company.
At the stadium.
Earned enough money to buy one Technics turntable, and my parents bought the other in, camaraderie. Just like, well done, you did it. We're going to help you out here. I was 16 years old, had two decks, and didn't really know what the hell to do. I used to go to Central Station Records and buy the Lucky Dip they had. So it was like 20 records for like $30 or $40. You didn't know what you were getting until you bought them.
I remember those. Came in a brown paper bag.
That's it. So, you know, full of goodness and crap. But it's a good way to, you know, learn how to mix.
And so do you come from a musical family? Do your parents, are they into music?
My parents are into music. My dad, however, is tone deaf. And he's never played an instrument in his life. My mother played guitar, and like specifically Spanish guitar, when she was younger. Mm-hmm. She used to sing a lot as well, so I think I get my music. And her father as well was a pianist. So
okay,
yeah, that's where I get the musical side for sure.
Right. And so, did she ever do it professionally or anything like that?
No, she was a school teacher, and so she would do that with the kids in class and all that kind of stuff.
So. And so, did you learn instruments when you were a kid?
I did. Yeah, I learned piano. I did like jazz piano lessons and blues and things like that. I played saxophone for 8 years, alto sax.
Were you in the concert band?
I was.
Did you like it?
I actually quit because I didn't like my teacher.
Okay.
So I now look back and go, oh. You know, damn. But
you could have been the Timmy Trumpet of saxophone.
That's it. What am I doing? So yeah, I did that, which was good. And then, you know, dabbled, of course, in guitar and bass guitar and, eventually synthesizers and things like that.
So you can clearly read music then? And
used to, yeah. Used to be able to easy.
Yeah, right. And so when you say you did jazz piano, can you improvise on those instruments and play jazz?
Yeah, that was my whole idea behind it, is like, teach me just the crux, like, well, what do I do here, and teach me about the chords and how they work with the scales and things like that, and then I would just play.
So when you were at school, you were in the concert band and stuff, but were you in other bands? Were you writing songs? Did you do much music stuff when you're at school?
Not a huge amount. A few friends and I had a band that we'd play like covers of Grinspoon and things like that. So,
and you'd be on the keys or on the guitar?
I'd be on the guitar for that. Yeah. So that would just be, you know, just fun. We'd play at like friends' parties and stuff.
Okay.
And get like three songs in until people are like, okay, I want to put some dance music back on. So yeah.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah.
So after school, you got your decks. Did you go to university?
I did. After school, I actually finished school in the UK.
Right.
It was just my dad's job, moved the whole family over there.
So you were there, but you're Australian. So you grew up in Sydney and Melbourne?
I was born in Melbourne. Okay. Lived in Brisbane for 18 months, Sydney for most of my life, the UK for 5 years.
For the last 5 years of school?
Yeah. I was in the UK, finished school.
Yes.
And then I stayed there for another few years because I went to the School of Audio Engineering, SAE.
In London,
yeah.
Wow.
So that was really interesting. And I finished that degree in Sydney. So halfway through, moved back to Sydney, back home with the rest of the family and finished that.
So you knew like that you wanted to do music or sound or whatever, you know, when you left school?
Well, actually, it was like at the end of year 10, I went to a school in the North Shore in Sydney. And I left at the end of year 10 and went to the Australian Institute of Music.
Right.
And I was 3 months into that when I had to leave to the UK. And then I went back to, you know, normal school.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, no, it was early on that I was like, music is my game. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
And so was it clear that that DJing was going to be your thing, or did you were you considering being in rock bands or anything like that?
No, it was definitely always like centered around electronic music and, and DJing and writing music.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What kind of year is that? So just like a 3-year degree. So we're talking like mid-noughties now, maybe, or?
No, 2004, 2005, 2006.
Okay.
So finished SAE, and then I somehow decided to go to UTS and do a finance degree, which I did. And it was at that time that I really started DJing a lot.
So you did a full finance degree?
Yeah.
Like the 3 or 4 years? Or
yeah, 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were you getting any pressure to get a proper job?
No, that was a me thing. Don't regret it at all. I did enjoy it. I think something like that sets you up for, it's, you know, you and I, we run our own businesses. Mm. It's important to be aware of what you get into and how things run and how you should treat people in business. So that gave me a good, you know, base level understanding of, you know, making money in music, I guess, as well. So it was at that time when I was at UTS that I started DJing on Bayswater Road in King's Cross.
And so those like the first kind of paid gigs?
Yeah, yeah, $100 an hour.
What kind of venues?
There was La Panic, Candy's Apartment. I think Sosumi had just kind of started up. So we had Q Bar on Oxford Street. And then much later on, we had Kit and Caboodle with the Keystone Group.
And how did you get those gigs?
A friend of mine, Garth, who is part of Falcona.
Falcona's the company that managed both me and Hayden.
And Garth used to not work at the door at Candy's, but he had something to, I'm not exactly sure of his job title, but he said, hey, do you want a DJ? You know, I can get you a gig. I said, yeah, okay, sure, let's do that. So that was kind of the in from there.
And were you writing songs at all?
No, I wasn't. This was like before Ableton as well. I mean, Ableton existed. Like I had Cubase, there was Reason, all those kind of programs, but I wasn't really around that and didn't quite understand how to, you know, structure a song and, you know, actually write music. I think the amount that I DJed really helped me understand pop music.
Were you supporting yourself through DJing?
I was, yeah. So that was it. It was like, you've got 5 or 6 gigs, and if you don't do them this week because you, you know, don't want to, you're not eating. So
yeah.
It was cool.
So when did you start writing songs?
I started
because you had quite a successful DJ career, really. Like you were playing quite big gigs as Sosumi DJs and
we got flown. I was in another group called Hey Now, and we got flown, you know, to Brisbane, like all over Australia actually, to DJ, and it was kind of like,
what did Hey Now
do? Style, like, oh, it was just a duo DJ group.
Yep.
And yeah, it was just kind of like heavy, like electro, 2007 electro. So you know, you got Justice, Daft Punks, and like, you know, all that, Chemical Brothers.
Yes.
All the good stuff. Hey Now, Modesty Nightclub, Hey Now DJs. We've got Rose. Handsome. Banging out right here, mate. What are we up to tonight, fellas? Where are we? What state are we in? We're in Brisbane, baby. We're in Brisbane.
Do you have any favourite songs from that era?
Oh, for me, like the whole reason I got into electronic music is Daft Punk. My brother brought home a CD when I was much younger and it was Around the World, like the single Daft Punk. Mm. And I was like, what is this? Played it and from there I was just instantly like, just hooked.
So that was what got you into electronic music.
That's the song.
Sound of Around the World.
That's it.
Did you go to the Alive tour?
I sure did. I actually didn't even. So the CD for the Alive tour came out maybe 6-8 months before they actually got to Australia.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No, you got like a Best of Daft Punk CD with your ticket.
That's right.
And then they.
And then they did. They actually recorded the Alive Paris set, which was the first one they did of the world tour. And I, you know, I'm such a big fan, and I didn't listen to it until I heard it live.
Me too. I didn't want any spoilers.
Exactly. But I had a good friend with me that was like tapping me on the shoulder every time and be like, wait for this, wait. I'm like, shut up. I'm here for this. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, that was, what a moment.
Well, I mean, this kind of thing had changed a lot of a lot of people. It's a very seminal moment in many of your generation of Australian musicians, that Daft Punk tour, and probably international musicians.
Absolutely, kind of like, absolutely.
It was so big and so bombastic and so awesome.
Yeah.
And the production was so crazy.
Yeah, but it was, so we're talking about...
When you first got to production, I guess.
So I was in a band called Cadillac and we signed a future classic.
So what was Cadillac?
Cadillac was this guy Ant from Melbourne, Antonio, and myself. And we had a session band when we played live. We played, I'm going to say not too many shows, maybe like 10 shows max.
Okay.
We've got an EP out. It's on Spotify.
Okay.
And it's kind of like Dreamtime pop. It's kind of like Miami Horror versus Tame Impala.
Right.
That's in a really nice way of putting it. It wasn't that good. it didn't work out. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out. So
sure.
It was actually at that moment that I said, you know, I'm doing this on my own. I'm not wasting my time with people, you know, holding me back and all this kind of stuff.
I was going to ask you about that actually, because it's interesting. There's so many duos around.
Yeah.
And you're on your own, but you've done it. You've been in duos, you've been in bands.
Exactly.
You've been through all that.
And then, yeah, I did all of that. And then I said, you know, this is my time to do my own thing.
Okay.
And I went into Future Classic and said, hey guys, you know, we had 3-year contract with them at the time. And I said, you know, the band was breaking up and I'm like, I want to take this contract on as Hayden James. And they said, cool, let's hear some demos. And like I think the next few months I wrote some music and the first release, one of them was Permission to Love.
Right.
And they said, cool, let's do this. When? 2013 that came out.
Did you teach yourself how to, you know, write music in Ableton and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think I had a bunch of people kind of give me tips and help me out along the way, but it was just through YouTube tutorials and things like that, and just like sitting there. You know, when I had days off at university, I would just sit there and write and learn how to do that. And then at night I would play gigs. That was it.
And so now hearing your musical past, like in Mission to Love, it's kind of a guitar thing in there. That's a lot of, is that you playing that live?
That's me. Yeah, that's me playing. That's me singing.
Really?
Yeah. But yeah, that's when I started really dabbling in production, I guess, of like, so I would play that riff and then cut it up and pitch it and, you know, like all those things.
Did you know that it was going to be your first kind of successful one? Did you know it was good?
Well, actually, when I sent it to my managers at the time, Garth and Muzz at Falcona, they were like, what is this? This is, I mean, it's funky, but like, we don't really get this, nah. And I'm like, no, trust me. I think this is going to be a good one. When I wrote it, yeah, I think for me, it's like when you write something and you can't stop listening to it.
Right.
And you're just like, okay, there's something here. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, so I had, there was Permission to Love, there was another song called Embrace on the record that I sing on too. You see it on my face, I know that when our heart beats one, troubles will be overcome.
Embrace, embrace, I miss your strong embrace. Oh yeah, I wasn't super across that EP, so I was listening to it. I really liked the first song, it has that kind
beginnings.
Of fast arpeggiator.
Yeah, so that's a piano, like, yeah.
I find that sound really interesting.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
So I think at the same time, like the first time you actually start writing music, I think I felt way more free than I do now in a way, because I hadn't put anything out. So it was like, what does Hayden James sound like? It's like, well, do whatever you want.
So did Permission to Love get on the radio and things?
It did. So the morning it was released, I put it on SoundCloud and it was on Future Classic Records.
And Future Classic are, you know, the coolest... of the cool.
It was very cool.
Yeah, they'd broken through at that point, I guess, but they still weren't powerhouse they are now.
I think it was also pre-Flume. So, yeah,
well,
they
2012
were just...
Well, 2012
is like a cool house record, you know, house records and stuff like that. So, yeah. So, so the morning at like 10 a.m., we put it online, and at midday, Louis McCurdy from Triple J played it on Triple J that day. It's like, oh my gosh, like this is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then from there, it got added to Triple J rotation. And I was like, whoa.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow. Exciting. You're hearing it on the radio. Were you a fan of Triple J?
Yeah. Huge fan.
Right.
Absolutely. Like, that's honestly the only station I listen to in Australia.
And so were you doing gigs as Hayden James? When did you start touring as
yourself? So that song came out, but I was still playing like Beach Road.
You're still DJing
like
to make a living.
8 till 11. Yeah, exactly. It wasn't at that time. It wasn't like you've made it. You've done this. Like you can travel. It wasn't.
Well, we reached that point. The next year was Something About You.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I also want to talk to you a lot about because it's an amazing song.
Thank you.
And it seemed like that's the point where things really kind of started to go a bit crazy.
That's
for
it. It was at that moment that I realized that I could do this for a living.
Where did that song come from? How did you come to it?
So I'm friends with this guy, Alex Burnett, who does a lot of like top line writing and things like that.
What does that mean?
So basically, I'll have a beat, an idea, and like a melody idea maybe for a vocal, and he'll go, hey, how about this? It's kind of like the silent partner of the duo, I guess, in that, you know, he helps artists. Like he's done stuff with countless Australian acts.
Right.
He was in a group called Sparkadia himself, actually.
I know Sparkadia.
Yeah. He's kind of just like, he's really good with, lyrics and tone and melody. And
so someone you can bring like a beat to and he'll like help.
Yeah, he'll go like, hey, have you thought of this? Have you thought of that? Just like opens your mind a little bit and helps you like with the writing process.
Huh.
He also works with George Maple, Jess Hicks. And we all came up with this idea, this hook that I just started cutting up and pitching and that became like the vocal of Something About You. I remember writing it. I had a studio off the side of my kitchen, and Jen, my wife, was like cooking dinner or like getting something happening. And I remember like writing these chords, and she stopped everything. It was like, what is that? You? Like, that sounds really cool. And I think I wrote the whole song within, an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, so really quick.
It has that really unique percussive kind of. Yeah. It's almost like a xylophone or something.
Yeah, it is. It's just like an Ableton xylophone pack.
Right.
It took maybe 3 or 4 months to actually get to the point where what you hear now, but the actual chords and the structure of the song was done within an hour.
And then in those 3 months, does that mean in that time are you just refining the sounds and like getting everything?
Exactly, like producing.
The vocals, so it's George Maple who's singing that line.
Yep.
And you pitched it down to
pitching it down. I'm also in there as well. Every song that I write, I make sure I'm in there too. So I actually do all the high parts of like the chorus and there's
like
all that stuff. And
to me, there's a couple of distinctive things in that song. Where the percussive xylophone thing and the choice that you made to shift that vocal down.
Yeah.
Do you remember why do you did that? Because obviously pitch shifting vocals is something that's in a lot of your music.
Yes.
But, people might not realize it's a woman singing at all.
No one does really. Yeah. I started pitching down with Permission to Love.
Yeah.
So that's me. That's my original vocal in that song. And then there's a lot of like, la, 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 all that kind of thing. And that's all pitch, just me.
Well, did you start doing that just because obviously Flume did that more later on and stuff?
I think it was more like, actually, I wanted to get this guy called Sampha on a track. This guy from the UK who's on XL Records. And I remember hearing Jess's vocal and going, oh, we pitched this. Like, it actually kind of sounds like Sampha. Don't think about it too much, too much, too much, too much. I had an interview once where they're like, how was it working with Sampha on that song? I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, that worked.
Yeah, right.
So it was more of a like a what I wanted the song to sound like than like, oh, I just want to pitch something. I've just done that forever. I mean, even in Embrace, like all the first records.
So when you work with a singer, you get to record stuff and then you sit down and cut it and play with it and pitch it and see what you can make out of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Change the BPMs, like all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Permission to Love was actually a 120 BPM dance song.
Yeah.
That I decided like, hey, what's this sound like at 100? And then like change the drums around that and
So does that look, for someone looking in, does that look like you at your laptop just tweaking stuff?
Pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
For hours and hours and hours.
Days. Yeah.
The lyric, There's Something About You, is obviously one of those perfect pop phrases now. Did Jess write that?
That was, yeah, Alex Burnett wrote that, and it was part of a bigger song that I just like started cutting down and looping and changing and pitching.
So it was recorded for a totally different thing and you made something out of it.
Exactly. So it's just like a weird, like amazing coincidence. And then from there I'm like, okay, cool, I need a second verse here. I need like a bridge. And then we started writing for this song.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, I remember the first time I heard it, it never said there's something about you. It said like there's something about this, blah, 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 something like that. And then I cut it to say that as well. So it was like,
right.
Yeah. So lots of tricks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is lots of work.
Yes.
Lots of that fine work of cutting and moving and editing.
Yeah.
And so when did you first know that this song was going to be great? I remember the first time I heard it was like our manager at the time, Muzz, played it for me in a car.
Mm.
And as we were driving somewhere, and I was like, oh, it just sounded so different to other stuff. Was it different to other stuff you were writing as well?
Yeah. And I think it's definitely a benchmark of what I do now is the simplicity. Like I find when you have a cool idea, don't layer it with crap. Don't layer it with all these synths or drums. And it's like, no. Find out like that's what's the core. What makes this good? Why do people like it?
Mm.
And continue down that route. So that was the first time I realized to just simplify everything. Mm. I think that's the main thing for the songs. Like there's only like a few elements in there. As you said, like, oh, I love that percussive, that melodic sound, xylophone thing. It's like, cool. There's like that, the bass, keys, vocal drums. Like, that's it.
Did you have any like, I know I'm going to go on a tangent here, but did you have any songs you were listening to that you think influenced you on it?
Yeah, I think this one I was listening to, I always listen to like, you know, Jamie XX. I've been to loud places to search for someone. In my head, like that, his kind of production is a little bit off left, a bit different. So I always get that, you know, interesting kind of ideas from that kind of production. But I remember listening to it again, a lot of Sampha, Subtract as well. What's that song there? What's that one?
No idea. I see the rainbow and the darkness at the same time. You know me, mate, are you?
Oh, God.
If you want to know like which single Cyndi Lauper did in the 80s,
yeah. I can help you out. No idea. Daft Punk, I was listening to like Something About Us. It might not be the right time. Like all the more like emotive kind of chordal kind of songs. Yeah, but no, nothing that was like this song must sound like that or like that that reference that. I just went for it.
When did you know that it was going
to
do well?
When I played it to some friends of mine that were over having some drinks on a weekend before it was out, I played it. And these guys, like, they'll go out to a club once in a blue moon. Like, they just don't really – they like music.
They're not your industry friends.
Exactly. So it's like when they get it and they're like, oh, well, can you send that to me? I just want to hear it. I'm like, okay. This is cool. This is something, yeah. And my mum liked it as well. So, you know, your mum likes something.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
It's such a fresh sounding song. And so it started to cross over to get commercial radio airplay and things like that.
Yeah.
So and then it became a global thing. And
yeah, so it went commercial. So we did Triple J and then the hit networks in Australia picked it up. So the Novas and all that kind of stuff. And that really pushed the song in terms of sales and things. I actually got a gold record in Australia, which is cool.
What does that mean?
It is, I think it's 30,000 units sold. I've got the plaque. It's great. I love it.
I guess like
just have it forever, you know? Like, yeah, Dad was cool. Like he was.
Well, I think when you're like 60, you have it in the bathroom, you know, oh, your grandkids totally are like, Granddad,
what is this?
But it's also like you've been in the music industry so long by that stage, like it must've been nice to have that kind of, you know,
It was
validation.
It was incredible. It was incredible to get that, yeah. So from there, we're talking like 8 months to a year down the track of the song being released. Virgin and Universal picked it up for the US and Europe. And then it got a big sync on like I think it was a Nokia commercial in Europe and just got smashed over there, which allowed me to go and play a lot of festivals in on this side of the
And then you, the so is that when you started touring as Hayden James and doing big shows?
Yeah. So I got a booker in the US who booked me festivals and then one in Europe as well. And yeah, it started to go from there.
You do like a huge amount of gigs, Hayden. Is there like a, was.
Compared to you, I don't know.
No, I'm like, no one wants to see me on a Tuesday, man. So like, I do Friday, Saturday. And I do less and less these days.
Yeah.
What's been a peak year for you of gigs during that time? It seemed like you were doing a lot of gigs.
Yeah, I mean, I always think like last year I thought that it was like, oh, I'm not sure about this year. And then it was like the busiest. So if, yeah. So it just keeps getting busier and busier, which is why I need to release a bloody record. but it was 2015 when Something About You was in like full rotation around the world. Played probably like 150 plus shows.
Yeah.
Most of them being festivals, you know, in Europe and the States, which is just such a cool experience.
Was there a moment of doing a big gig where you, as yourself, as Haddon James, and playing that song, where you felt like you'd broken through to something?
I think for me it was Splendor.
Everyone says Splendor.
Yeah. It's one, I think it's, you know, we're Aussie. We're Aussie. It's just like one of those festivals you look up to and be like, wow, if I could do that one day. You know, because always I went there as well with Muzz and a lot of the Falcona guys, you know, 5 years before, and we'd always go. And it was, I think the one before. So we're talking 2016. Yeah. And that's when I played the mix-up tent on I think it was Friday at like 5:30 or 6 p.m., full tent, like 10,000-15,000 people, and that was just like, that's probably my favorite moment for my live show I've ever had experience.
Yeah. Man, it's something
special.
And that
was, you did it the year before, I think. Mix
yeah, I did
up.
2014.
Yeah, 24, okay, yeah.
It was actually quite long ago. It was quite new, really.
Yeah.
It's like, I got that gig quite early.
Yeah, that was huge. I remember being backstage with you and you were just like, you were shitting bricks.
Yeah, well, you set up my gear, that's right. Because yeah. Like I had...
Your power went down, I think, like 10 minutes before you were going on as well or something. It was like, oh God.
And I really wanted them to be able to see. I wasn't confident enough to tell the crew what I wanted, and the LED screen went up over my turntables and you were like, no, make it right, get some road cases.
Yeah, yeah.
I appreciated that.
Always here for you, mate.
So then you had like Just a Lover in 2016, and then you've had Numb recently.
Yep.
Obviously, you have a very measured output.
Mm.
Why do you think that is?
I'm a perfectionist, and I think way too much about things. It could be so simple, I could be so true to you. You were just a lover in my heart. I've got so many demos. I let people listen to them and they're like, dude, this is great. Put this out, like make this a part of something. And I'm doing that. I am letting go a little bit.
About how many like demos and
30, 40 songs.
Right.
So it's now come to the point for me, it's like, just do this. So next year I am releasing a record. Absolutely. Right. I'm so excited to, like, I don't know how I'm going to feel when I actually have it finished and mastered and sitting there. It's just going to be a very great experience for me.
So it's kind of like a perfectionism, you think?
Yeah. But I think also it's like, that's the reason why I think these songs do well, is like I've just, you know, spent so much time with them and got them exactly how I want them to be. And that takes time as well.
Yeah, Numb sounds like, it just sounds so polished. I think that's what I like about it. Like it's the, it has the Australian sound, but it's just gorgeous.
Thank you. That one, that was the quickest one because I actually hadn't written. So I wrote that with Grace, who's another Aussie, in March this year. So we were, that's the quickest. I'm getting quicker.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I guess when your process is doing that fine adjustment and things, it must be hard to know when something's done.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. It's like you can just keep going or like, oh, what does it sound like with this sound or like this synth or how about we change the structure? I think you've just got to make decisions and move on. That's what I've learned is like, because I remember one of my songs, Embrace, I had, no kidding, like, I think I had like 30 or 40 versions of that song, which is why there are actually two versions of the song out there on Spotify. There's Embrace, brackets, versions, And then there's the one Embrace on the EP.
Yeah, right on. So when you're writing Numb with Grace, how does that work? Were you guys together in a room or did you send her a beat? Or?
Yep, so I sent her, we'd never met, and she was coming over to my place. I've got a little studio set up in Sydney. She was in the Uber on the way, and I played these chords to her, which is the chorus chords of Numb, just on this Prophet, and I sent them to her, and then she came back with a voice note. She was just humming the over the top and sent it to me before we met. And I was like, holy shit, that's it. That's sick. It's kind of like a nursery rhyme to me.
And is that her voice's natural pitch or did you play?
No, the chorus is, there's quite a bit going on. Like, it doesn't sound like it, but there's quite a bit going on in there. It is pitched down a little bit, but it's not pitched tonally. It's pitched like with formants. So it just sounds a little off and weird.
Right.
But then that's her natural voice in the verses.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, we wrote that one that day.
Cool.
That was it. And again, you know, that takes me a bit of time to figure out how it sounds. And we played with structure and go, oh, okay, let's make this pre-build this way. So it took a bit more time, but only, you know, a month or two. But we wrote that song pretty much the first day we met.
Sick. Do you ever kind of wish that you were in a duo, that you could have someone to...
Yes. Let's do it. No, yeah, I do sometimes. But also I love... doing anything, I can do whatever I want, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
And I've got friends and family to bounce things off anytime. So they're kind of like, I feel like they're part of the Hayden James world anyway.
So yeah, man, I wanted to talk to you a bit about the other members of the golden generation of Australian electronic musicians that you know and have worked with and stuff. Because it seems like there's quite a community amongst you guys. So, for instance, Alice in Wonderland, how she says that you're the person who taught her how to DJ and things like that, which is kind of incredible given where she is now.
Yeah.
So, like, how long have you known her? And
So I met her, Garth from Falcona was dating her, and she was in a band called, I think it was called Beaumond, and we went and saw her play a few gigs. She was a bass player. She plays cello as well. And she wanted to start getting into DJing. This was, this is 10 years ago when we were just like starting out at Candies and stuff. So, yeah, she came around one day and like I showed her like the deck. Because I was using vinyl as well and like not using CDJs at the time.
You can scratch too. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, we met like, 10 years ago and we've, you know, been hanging out and friends ever since and playing, you know, gigs around the world. And
anyone else that we'd know from that scene? Like I think Emo, What's So Not? Was
Emo, we did a lot of production at the start of like, we kind of learned how to produce a lot of stuff together. We also did a remix, it was like a Diplo remix competition and we won it. We were on his vinyl.
So was that one of the first things that you had success with?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we actually didn't know we won because it was like, again, before like everyone was on MySpace and stuff. So it was... yeah, it's a bit of a fizzle, but it was fun. So we did that together. And, you know, just obviously being in Sydney, everyone is friends, like, you know, from the Flight Facilities guys, the Peking Duck boys as well, Golden Features. Like, we all hang out together. It's great, great vibe.
Yeah.
Anna Luno, I taught her, like, I remember, like, showing her the decks the first time as well and hanging out. We were, like, friends of friends from school, so.
I love her career, to be honest. I love the way that she... found a house sound and just moved to America too and just had the guts to make, given that she had a quite successful career,
exactly.
Successful career in Australia.
Absolutely.
Hey, do you have any like favorite remixes that other people have done of your music?
Yeah, well, the one that comes to mind is Odessa's remix of Something About You. What about a hit? What about a hit of your love? Start to shake with your head. Will it ever click? Will it ever click? Are you a freak? You turn and face. That's a cracker. They actually did.
Did they take the? Because that's the one that you listen to, and it's. Feels like you're hearing the actual vocal because it seems
that's
like
right.
It's at her natural
They've
pitch.
They've pitched it back. Exactly. Yeah. With your head, will it ever click? Will it ever click? Are you a freak? You turn and face me. Maybe this time I choose
So Odessa, they've been kind of like pretty important in your career and stuff. How did you meet those guys? Was it a music industry thing or did you know them through music and stuff?
No, they came down to Australia to play two shows with me and a few other people, just like a mini kind of festival a few years ago. So we did Melbourne and Sydney and we just hung out after the show and pretty much became best friends straight away. And they brought me on tour when we were touring like, you know, 300 to 400 cap rooms. This is 2-3 years ago. We're all in a Sprinter van. There were like 10 guys.
Was that the first US tour that you did?
Yeah, yeah. So we were, yeah, just 30 shows around the States and like in the middle of nowhere sometimes. And yeah, it was a real experience. So
Now they're doing like... You guys did Red Rocks together.
We did. Yeah. Oh, no. I did Red Rocks with Rufus, but I was there for them. They did Red Rocks. They just sold out Staples Center in LA. Like, yeah, I think they're going to make it. Yeah. But no, I've been on tour with them a whole bunch and yeah, definitely a huge part of my not only touring career, but just musicality and how I write, absolutely.
What about a hit? What about a hit? So Rufus is another name you mentioned. How far back do you go with those guys?
All the way, like when I started writing music. So when Permission to Love came out, I did a tour around Australia supporting Rufus and it was my first shows ever as Hayden James. And they were doing, I think we did Metro Theatre with them in Sydney, and then
it's like a 700 or 800. It's like kind of a fairly legendary venue. If you grow up in Sydney, you want to play there.
Absolutely. So yeah, those guys brought me on tour, and you know, again, we just bonded on the tour and became good friends, and with their manager as well, Danny Robson. Yeah, and that went from there. I mean, we talk to each other all the time. We send each other music. Like, what do you think about this demo?
So you do bounce tunes off
definitely
these people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, right on. Do you have any favorite remixes that you've done of other people's music?
Yeah, one of my favorite kind of weird ones, I guess, is Dylan Francis and Teed did a song called Without You. Mm-hmm. And I remixed that. That's about 4 years old now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that one's one of my favorites. What else? I did an Empire of the Sun remix last year, which I really enjoyed. But probably maybe the biggest one for me was either Odessa Say My Name or Duke Dumont's Ocean Drive. And actually, I just remembered I did remixes as a different, under a different name. Before I did the Hayden James project, I called myself Universe, and I did a remix for Miami Horror and one for Bag Raiders as well. So they're out there somewhere on YouTube.
Yeah, right.
So check them out.
Certainly Bag Raiders feature in a lot of people's early remixes and stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean and Shooting Stars, like that was the first time I think someone that we all kind of knew that had that international success. Just
right.
Like, whoa, what a monster song. And like, yeah, you can do it too.
Yeah, right on.
Mm.
Because yeah, I guess that's the start of your generation is kind of Bag Raiders and like presets and stuff from maybe a little bit before you guys Cut Copy maybe.
Yeah, Cut Copy, yeah. I haven't listened to them in a long time. But yeah, they were like, when I started going to Splendor, they were the big guys to see.
They're absolutely already broken, for sure. Lily Allen, how does that happen? You have a songwriting credit with Lily Allen.
No, Katy Perry.
Katy Perry, damn it. So Hayden, you have a songwriting credit with Katy Perry. Seamless. How does that work? When you're drunk, you say I'm the
one, then you wake up. So her A&R of the record, Lauren Glucksman, found me and emailed my manager at the time and was like, hey, does Hayden want to come and do some sessions with Katy Perry? And we were like, is this a joke? Is this like, who is this? We realized it wasn't. And we're like, hell yeah, let's go. So they flew me to Santa Barbara and I spent a week with her, just Katie and I in the studio in October last year.
What does that involve? Like you're kind of at playing with instruments and just trying to get songs happening?
Yep, so I'd written like 30 or 40 kind of demo ideas prior to the sessions, just so it was like, you know, we had stuff to work off. And I'd sent her a bunch as well. So she was on top of like the ideas that I had. She was after like, you know, more dancey kind of song for the record. So yeah, we had a lot of stuff to start off with. It wasn't just like, okay, play. But yeah, I had keyboards there, some all different synthesizers, whatever I wanted, they would just rent.
She cool?
She's very cool. Yeah, really down to earth, like very casual. Yeah, awesome, awesome person.
Do you do much of that kind of work?
I want to do a lot more. I've done a bunch of stuff with friends in the past. Alice in Wonderland's Run, the chorus, there's like this big like moment, like
pitch the song
stuff. Run. Yeah, yeah. And that's me. So I wrote that chorus line and stuff. So yeah, I'd started dabbling in that. Mm. And then yeah, Katie was obviously, yeah, I mean, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy. Yeah.
So you obviously travel a lot and tour a lot. How do you go balancing your life out in terms of like traveling and writing music? And
well, yeah, I used to not be able to really do it at all. Like I would be like, no, I need to be in the studio in a quiet space for me to like think and figure out what I want to do. And that soon changes when you realize that you're on the road for 8 months of the year. You've got to adapt. So I did very quickly. So that means like, you know, we're in New York right now and then Airbnb, I've got a laptop, I've got a little mini MIDI keyboard, some speakers from a friend that I borrowed. You know, I could go and rent a studio, an expensive studio in the city, but it's like, I don't need to, you know, you don't need to do that when you're writing these demos. So
yeah,
as long as you have a little setup somewhere, that usually works out.
Are you enjoying it? Are you having fun?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It seems like you guys, you and your wife, Jen, do it's traveling. You guys
it's amazing
live out of a suitcase.
Yeah, we do it well, I think. You know, for instance, like the last times we've been to Europe in the summer playing a bunch of festivals, we'll make sure that we are either there the week before or the week after to be like, hey, we've come all this way. Let's have a mini holiday as well. So we'll, you know, jet off somewhere. So it's important to take advantage of the fact that you're traveling all the time and not just, you know, live in hotels and things. Like, no, like enjoy yourself.
Got to get out and enjoy the cities and travel and stuff.
That's it.
Well, cool, man. That's kind of like towards the end of the stuff I wanted to ask you. But I got the thing I do always ask. So what are your top five songs of all time? And you have to answer.
Oh, God.
Okay. So I'll give you my top five. Okay. And my top five changes every time.
Okay.
And I'm going to come up with them too. So number five, Respect by Aretha Franklin. What you want, baby, I got. Number four will be, what's it? It's the Smiths, How Soon Is Now.
Yes.
I really love that song.
Yep.
Number three, I'm going to go with Cornflake Girl by Tori Amos.
I don't even know
Cornflake Girl. It was like, for me, it came out like the year that I finished school, like 96, and I was a piano player and the lead line is piano. It's like Tori Amos's only like funky, amazing song. It has this piano solo at the end that goes like 2 minutes and
awesome.
I love it. And number two, I'll go for like One More Time by Daft Punk. One more time. Number one, I'll go for Inner Bloom by Rufus.
Oh, wow.
There you go, mate. So that's my top five of all time. What's your top five?
That's
of all
huge.
Time?
Man, I gotta really think about this.
Come on.
Okay.
It's easy. You just get started and you go for it.
Yeah. Okay. Number five for me would be Voyager by Daft Punk on their Discovery record. That was the first time I kind of like, it's so just so funky and so emotive, the chords. There's an awesome arp that comes in between it in the middle of the song. There's no vocal actually. It's just an instrumental.
I'm not super across Voyager. I'll have to.
It's a goodie.
Pick it up.
It's a goodie. I would say number four would be kind of, I'd say anything Beach Boys, to be honest. I listened to a lot of Beach Boys when I was younger and like taught me a lot of harmony and all that kind of stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, like, is there any particular songs that you remember that, like, obviously for me, Good Vibrations is my favorite of their songs.
Probably Good Vibrations for me as well, actually. I'm picking up good vibrations.
vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm backing up.
What was that? It's Pet Shop Boys. What was the record? What was the record?
Oh, Pet Sounds.
Pet Sounds, not Pet Shop Boys. Yeah. Pet Sounds, that whole album is incredible.
That's a great video of them singing the harmonies, those guys. They can sing. Oh, my God.
Yeah, all of them. Amazing. Number three would be Chemical Brothers' Swoon. That's that record as well. I think the record is Further.
Okay.
That's a killer one. That's
About what era is that? I'm not across that one either.
Oh, mate. This is good.
My musical knowledge is a mile wide, but a centimetre deep.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I'm deep just in one or two years of my electro life in 2007. I think that came out 2010 or 11. Number two, it'd have to be Piano Man Billy Joel.
It's 9 o'clock on a Saturday. A regular crowd shuffles in.
It's the first song I learnt on piano, and one of my dad's favourite songs, and just have a great connection to that. And number one, my favourite song of all time. Huge.
This is huge. You should, this will be remembered. There's the definitive statement.
I'd have to say One More Time, Daft Punk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so Discovery is my favorite record of all time, and Interstellar 5555. Have you watched that before?
Yes.
Yeah, good. Thank you. I thought you were like, I don't know what you're talking about. That to me is the pinnacle of dance music. It's old now, but it still rings true to me, and it's an incredible song.
Yeah, I think One More Time is the best piece of dance music ever written.
Yeah.
It's just the dance music song, it's the lyrics of it.
But everyone can understand it and enjoy it. That's a good thing as well. It's
it's such a great thing of pop dance music.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do. That's
it. All right, man, that's it. Thanks, Hayden.
Beautiful. Thank you, mate. Cheers.
Bro.
Awesome.
Done.
That's it. Thanks for listening to Backstage Soundtrack. There are plenty more episodes available for you to check out right now. I hope you enjoy them. If you want to get in touch, I'm Hot Tub Time Machine on all the social medias, and I'll see you next time. Bye.